here, Your Majesty, an infant phenomenon. A remarkable child of 10. He's quite a historian. Editor of our school magazine.
Ah, very interesting.
This, Your Majesty, is Rupert, our young editor.
How do you do, Rupert?
You.
Sit down. And what's that you're reading?
Karl Marx.
Surely you're not a communist.
Do I have to be a communist to read Karl Marx?
Rupert.
That's a valid answer. Well, if you're not a communist, what are you?
Nothing.
Nothing?
I dislike all forms of government.
But somebody must rule.
And I don't like the word rule.
Well, if we don't like the word rule, let's call it leadership.
Leadership in government is political power, and political power is an official form of antagonizing the people.
What magazine did you say he edits? A commentary on current events. Pardon me. My dear young man, politics are
necessary.
Politics are rules imposed upon the people.
In this country, rules are not imposed. They are the wish of all free citizens.
Travel around a bit, then you'll see how free they are.
Yes, but you didn't let me finish.
They have every man in a straitjacket, and without a passport, he can't move a toe.
But if you'll allow me to...
In a free world, they violate the natural rights of every citizen.
But you don't let me fully...
They have become the weapons of political despots.
Yes, but may
I... And if you don't think of this thing, you're deprived of your passport.
Will you allow me
to... leave a country is like breaking out of jail.
Yes,
and
but...
to enter a country is like going through the eye of a needle.
But
am I free to travel?
Of course you're free to travel.
Only with a passport.
Will you allow me to say
something? Only with a passport. Do animals need passports?
Have you finished?
It's incongruous that in this atomic age of speed, we are shut in and shut out by passport.
If you'll shut up and let somebody else talk...
And free speech, does that exist?
No, you've got it all.
And free enterprise.
We were talking of passports.
Today it's all monopoly.
All right. Now will you...
Can I go into the automobile business and compete with the other trucks?
If I can get in a word...
Not a chance. Can I go into the grocery business and compete with the chain stores?
Will you shut up?
Not a chance. Monopoly is the menace of free enterprise. As I look back 60 years ago...
Where were you 60 years ago?
He was a great grandfather.
Very well now. Have you finished? Now let me say something. Let me tell you how wrong you are. In the first place... In the first place... Now I've forgotten what I wanted to say.
And the atomic bomb.
Ah.
It's a crime that when the world cries for atomic energy, you want to make atomic bombs.
Me? I'm against atomic bombs.
You want to wipe out civilization. Destroy all life on this planet.
You don't think you're living in the future.
I lost my throat because I didn't want atomic bombs.
You and your kind think that atomic bombs can solve your problems.
Listen, you little rat.
Today, man has too much power. The Roman Empire collapsed with the assassination of Caesar. And why? Because of too much power. Feudalism blew up with the French Revolution. And why?
Right.
Because of too much power. And today the whole world will blow up. And why?
Because of too much power.
The monopoly of power is a menace to freedom. It degrades and victimizes every individual. And where is the individual?
I don't know.
Lost in terror because he's made to hate instead of love. If civilization is to survive, we must combat power until the dignity and peace of man are restored.
Well, that's from a movie entitled The Anarchist Kid, which Charlie Chaplin was in that movie. He's the one talking to the kid. Of course, Charlie Chaplin was a leftist. Some would say even a Marxist, but I certainly agree with much of what he said, and I agree with almost everything the kid said, and I think that he's closer to the mark than most people, political parties, that's for sure. This is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, in the bunker right here in north central Indiana on a rainy, rainy day, which is good for the crops. I'm going to plant a bunch of flowers, flower seeds, as soon as it stops raining. And I want to have a real pretty flowery place around here. Where I can, well, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to enjoy it. Okay, we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And in this free country of ours, where you're free to do everything, almost everything, you certainly can abuse a white heterosexual male all you want. You can beat on him, and it won't be a hate crime. Yeah. And you can take out, subscribe to money programs where you can transfer money all over the country, but not if you're a white heterosexual proud racial separatist advocate. We forget about PayPal. So if you want, just send it to the bunker. That's 1134 South Ferguson Road. That's Ferguson. Warsaw, Indiana, 46580. Yeah. And like I say, maybe we'll get one of those programs again, but I don't see why we can't handle it this way. You and I are not a big outfit. We're sort of small on the whole sphere of things. So let's see how it works out. Cash, check, or money order to Tom Metzger or War. Or you can make the money orders or the checks out to Cash. You can do that too. You can do all kinds of stuff when you're dealing with terrible Tommy.
The Jewish community of Brussels had prepared two major Purim events for this week, intended as the focal point of celebrations in the city, but now, according to Ma'ariv, both events have been cancelled. The authorities have requested everyone in the city to stay home over the next few days, following the horrendous terror attacks Tuesday. Rabbi Menachem Margolin, the Israel-born head of the European Jewish Association lobby group, whose office is right next door to the Molenbeek metro station, where one of the bombings took place, reported a very difficult day for the local Jewish community. "The Jewish community here in Brussels and in Europe in general is not surprised," he told Ma'ariv. "We've been receiving alerts for a long time now. Despite the shock the city experienced, we were not surprised. Of course, we feel the concern and the pressure, but we were really not surprised by everything that's going on in the city. It was only a matter of time before such an attack happened. We evacuated family by family from the Jewish school," Rabbi Margolin described the day. "We feared additional attacks and contacted the families. To avoid panic, we asked that they take the children one at a time. Since then, all the families are at home. We obey the instructions from the security services." Rabbi Margolin has no doubt there are additional terror cells still lurking around Brussels. "The fact that the terrorist from Brussels was able to hide in the city for several months means there was someone helping him, which is why I believe these were not the last attacks we'll be seeing here. The routine right now is difficult. There's a feeling of insecurity. The holiday events are being cancelled and we're listening to the security forces. Following last November's deadly Paris attacks, Rabbi Margolin called on European governments to relax gun licensing legislation and to allow Jews in particular to carry firearms for self-defense. But on Tuesday he said he did not believe the motive for the new attacks had been anti-Semitic. The attacks were not directed at Jews but against all the citizens of Europe who are getting used to a new reality," he said, adding, "God is guarding us and we're doing everything in our power to make sure that all the Jews in our community are safe." Jewish schools and institutions in both Brussels and Antwerp have been shut down. At least two local Jews were hurt in the attack. One an Israeli Haredi man who lives in Antwerp and was in Brussels for a wedding, and another Jewish person was moderately wounded, according to Samuel Markowitz, a paramedic from Hatzalah who spoke to.
Well, this is sort of my answer to that through another writer. This is Holy Week when the Christians, and it should be, when the Aryans, but this is Christians mediate on the gospel account of the crucifixion of Christ, which unfortunately never happened. It couldn't have happened because he didn't exist. But this is also an unholy week because it will see the beginning of Purim. P-U-R-I-M, the rabbinic festival of revenge and genocide on the Gentiles, specifically the Persians, I believe. No wonder the Iranians have a hatred for the Jews. The son of the late chief rabbi of Rome, Professor Ariel Toaff, before he was silenced by a lynch mob tactics, proved indisputably in his magnificent book, which I can't pronounce, Pascu de Sangue, translated and published underground in English as The Blood Passover, that Ashkenazic Judaics ceremoniously tortured and murdered Christian children in the European Middle Ages, which, of course, everybody poo-poos now. Whoop, let's see here. There is a hidden hand behind the Saudi Arabian ISIS brand of Sunni Islamic terror, which has been consistently aided in Syria by the Israeli government. This terrorist brand of Islam has never attacked the Israeli state, like the alliance between the rabbi and the Muslims in Spain in the medieval period. We have witnessed Israeli officials, including Defense Minister Moshe Yalon, state openly that they prefer a victory of ISIS in Syria. The message of Purim, this Kaik holiday, is one of underlying hatred for the genetic Aryan seed of Europe that defeated the creed of the Talmud and the Kabbalah during the Catholic Middle Ages and in early Lutheran Germany. Well, I don't agree with that. I think it was turned out to be an extension of Judaism. While Saudi and Salafist Islam abandons the Palestinians to the non-existent mercy of the Israelis, who only have to deal with a few out-of-their-minds knife-wielders and rock-throwers. Machine guns sputter and bombs explode throughout Europe with disastrous regularity. Said that the most recent attack in Brussels may have been retaliation for the capture of terrorist Abdusalam. That could be true. What is certain, however, is the hidden hand that keeps the Israeli state immune from the Wahhabist Islamic terror has inflicted some Purim-style vengeance on a dying Europe, Little of this will be revealed this week, however, in the struggle against terror. The Aryans will get the message that they need to unite more than ever with the spiritual heirs of those who falsely crucified the Savior. See, I tried to edit some of this out because the guy who wrote this was a Christian. I know him very well. And I'm not going to go into what I know about him. And yeah, part of it's pretty good. But they keep wanting to not say Aryan, they want to say Christian all the time, like Christian is a race. They forget that it was the first terrorism that nailed Christ to the cross, despite the effort of the Roman Pontius Pilate to save him. As it is written in the Babylonian Talmud, it was not easy to kill Jesus because he had friends among the rulers of Palestine. Now, this is baloney, and I should have edited this down before I read it to you, because it's the same old Christ insanity stuff. Anyhow, I just should have looked over this article before I read it. It's mostly promoting Christianity and not the Aryan race. We do know that this Purim was genocide towards the Persians and the Iranians. And a large section of Iranians are white. no matter what their religion is, they're white. It's interesting about that article because everything most right-wingers write, they copyright. I don't think in this day and age a true white racial separatist concerned with the race should be copywriting his material. Don't forget, and you should remind people, that slavery was simply a capitalist system of making money. It was an entrepreneur situation, capitalistic and so forth. And the only reason that blacks were made the slaves is because they were the weakest of the races. They were easy to make slaves. If they had not been so easy to be made slaves, there wouldn't have been slavery. Remember that. So when they tell you how horrible white people are, well, let's sort of narrow in on the percentage of people that were horrible, and that was the capitalist slave owners and the people who invested money in the plantations and the people who invested money in the slave ships and all that. These were the top of the economic heap. They weren't the working class whites. So tell them, blacks tell you about your being slave masters, tell them to kiss your ass. You didn't have anything to do with it. If you want any proof that New Jersey has become a niggerized Jewish state, listen to this, and this is from the mouth of the Jew. New Jersey Senator Cory Booker. Whoops, wait a minute here, I lost that. Hold on. New Jersey Senator Cory Booker is fond of telling the story of his introduction to Judaism. A nigger American Baptist, well, he was almost a Jew then. Booker attended Oxford University in the early 1990s as a Rhodes Scholar. Yeah, I'll bet he was. That was back when they were giving niggers titles of nobility hand over fist. There he had a chance encounter with a young Chabad rabbi named Shmuley Boteach that sparked a lifelong interest in the Jewish myths. Booker would eventually become co-president of Boteach's Lahaim Society, its first non-Kaik leader, and would maintain a decades-long friendship with the rabbi and an immersion into Jewish study. A journalist, Jeffrey Goldberg, once quipped, "I've met most of the Senate's other Jews, and I can say with a high degree of certainty that Booker knows more Torah than they do." I'm not quite sure whether he's a U.S. senator or just a state senator. Now there's additional video evidence for Booker's well-documented affection for Judaism. At sundown, the Jewish holiday of Purim commences for this weekend, a day during which the Jews celebrate their genocide against the Persian people by feasting and dancing and revelry. And while at Oxford, Booker celebrated right along with them. Footage from this time there captures him partying on Purim at the campus Shabbat house carrying Boteach dressed as a clown on his back. These few minutes of footage were originally interspersed with a 50-minute home video posted by Boteach to his personal YouTube channel. The clip of Booker recalling the celebration is from a joint appearance by him and Boteach at a Jewish Federation event. Today, even Boteach and Booker have hit a rough path in their relationship over their positions on the Iran deal. The footage stands as a monument to one of the most unlikely interfaith friendships of our time. There you go. I'm going to try to send you a video of this stupid Booker playing with the Jews. Well, there's a pretty anti-Jew program on the internet called, Ugly Truth? I just put up a comment to an article on Purim, and unless they're just slow getting it up there, they're not going to print my comment because it was critical of Christianity, Christ's insanity, and so forth. So be interesting to see who's behind that. If you know who's running this program called Ugly Truth, I like a name. Well, this is a little bit embarrassing for somebody. A far right politician who's been vocal in his opposition to taking in invaders from Syria has been rescued from a car crash by refugees. Stefan Zhang sustained severe injuries in a smash near Boedington in Hesse, Germany. Reports state that he lost control of his vehicle on the road between Allenstadt and Boedington on the 16th of March and crashed into a tree. But he was rescued by two Syrian asylum seekers from a passing minibus who gave him first aid. Well, that wouldn't happen. That wouldn't be publicized if he was a lone wolf, because they wouldn't know he was a National Socialist at all. Also, don't get excited. Some things are just sort of automatic. It reminds me of the time when my security man and I drove out of the street where I lived in Fallbrook, California, and lo and behold, in the middle of the busy thoroughfare, fairly busy, was a Negro baby sitting right in the middle of the road. Must have been only about 1 or 2 years old. Well, my man jumped out of the car and he went over and got the baby and got it over to its mother. Now, what does that mean? Well, that's something that's automatic. You have Aryan scruples, and in most cases, you automatically will do something like that. Not too many people. I don't remember ever meeting an Aryan actress who would let that baby get squashed, no matter how you feel about race. So this is no big deal, you know. It's an automatic thing many times. The German MP, member of the so-called neo-Nazi, which that's bullshit term, National Democratic Party of Germany, was pulled from the car by this pair near one of the many new refugee shelters, invader shelters, set up since more than 1 million invader seekers have entered the country. The Syrians then called for medical attention for the 29-year-old NPD candidate at this month's local elections in the area. Jean-Christophe Fleeter, the NPD's leader in the Hesse region, told the Frankfurter Rundschau newspaper that the Syrians had likely performed a very good and humane deed. Okay, what's the big deal? You know, I just saw a photograph of Donald Trump and his daughter when she was quite a bit younger. She just married this kike. But to be perfectly honest, she appears to be Jewish even before she married the Jew. Well, guess what? A poll conducted for the Learning to Live Together initiative in Israel has found high levels of fear of racism in the Arab sector. The survey found that 85% of Israeli Arabs feel the current situation would lead to more attacks and racism against Arabs.
Every business, the right information doesn't always get into the right hands.
Let's pick up where I left off there. Another 78% of these Israeli Arabs are afraid to go to shopping malls and entertainment venues. The study is part of a project to improve coexistence between Arabs and Jews. Oh, brother. There is a great anxiety about the future. It is a warning sign. A warning sign of great anxiety, said Gada Zoabi, founder of the CEO of the Israeli Arab news portal
Makra.net. The survey was carried out by the ESCOM firm and included 611 interviews in order to chart the attitudes of the Arab public to the current security situation and the impact of violence. The slight majority of respondents, 56%, expressed pessimism regarding an improvement of the situation in the near future. The data showed a sharp increase in anxiety compared to previous polls. The Living Together initiative has operated among Israeli Arabs and has the backing from many religious and municipal leaders. There you go. The Arabs are afraid of those Jews. Wait a minute. I thought, Jews were afraid of those Arabs. What the hell? Is latent racism giving way to overt racism? That's the question. Get them out of here, shouts a certain presidential candidate at one of his rallies, prompting his devout adherents to scream with delight and resulting in the taunting of, cursing at, shoving, and even spitting on those being removed from the scene. One cannot help but take note that those being taunted and removed are persons of color or of another faith other than Christian. The presidential candidate watches with smug satisfaction and does nothing to halt the despicable display of hate being unleashed by the rhetoric. Wow. Overt racism is easy to identify. For the past 40 years, such has been out of fashion and considered totally inappropriate for an educated and civilized people. It is the way things used to be, but not now. It is the way it was in the 50s and the 60s. Separate schools, separate water fountains, separate restrooms. It's people in the streets shouting, 2, 4, 6, 8. We won't integrate with those damn niggers. After the 1970s, overt racism in the United States grew to be more of a taboo because millions and millions of dollars in propaganda were spent on promoting race mixing. This does not mean it went away. It simply transformed into the latent form. As I see it, latent racism is being racist while stopping short of using the nigger word. This writer, I grew up in southeast Missouri, known as Little Dixie, due to the cotton industry and its large nigger American population. My Baptist preacher dad and mother dared in the 50s to speak out against racism because we loved the baby Jesus, and gave support to the Freedom Riders in the 50s and early 60s. To be a young teen in school called in a nigger lover, to be shoved around in the halls and hear his parents cursed, was a lesson in racial intolerance I and my brother have carried all our lives. Never did we think that we would see its ugly head rear itself in such a populist way in today's political arena. Sadly, in this time of growing racial and religious intolerance, especially regarding Muslims, our Christian pulpits are silent as the tide of hate and racism and intolerance. Seems to have free rein and even support from many sitting in church pews. Sunday after Sunday, latent racism resting just under one's skin is still racism. In the current political climate, charged with division and strong emotions, latent racism is a powerful aspect influencing the race for the highest office of our great and wonderful, perfect nation. Latent racism is just as powerful and evil as overt racism. How sad that we as an electorate allow our distaste for the establishment and the current state of affairs in our nation to ignore any presidential candidate's use of hate or fear and unleash latent racism to full-blown overt racism. How sad that we as an electorate allowed our distaste. Oh, I said that. Let's get on down here a little farther. Oh, that was written by a guy from Princeton, and we know people in Princeton are perfect and love the baby Jesus, and no racism is bad for you. On Monday, thousands of supporters of Israel filed into the Verizon Center in Washington, D.C. to watch the Republican presidential candidates address the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, AIPAC, the most influential arm of the Cheneys in this country. The line to get in spanned an entire block wrapped around the corner and was a scene of confrontations between conference attendees and assortments of protesters, some chanting against Israel, others against AIPAC, and almost everyone against Donald Trump, the Republican front-runner whose big speech was just hours away. And I'll tell you what, I saw the video of those people in the audience, and they were on their feet clapping all the time. I didn't see any demonstrators inside the building. It was a perfect opportunity to engage with Israel's most politically active supporters. So I pulled out my camera phone and began to ask what they thought of Trump. Well, most respondents expressed an extremely negative view about the candidate, slamming his racism, xenophobia, and incitement to violence. So I decided to conduct an experiment to test for the consistency by attributing racist statements made by Israeli leaders to Trump and asking respondents what they thought of such language. Most people I spoke to, with energetically condemning racist statements attributed to Trump. However, when I revealed the statements had actually been made by Israeli leaders, including Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, respondents immediately excused, justified, or supported the rhetoric they had just condemned. Wow. One young woman said of Trump, "He's terrible. He incites racist attitudes." When asked, "What do you think about Trump's comments comparing migrants to cancer?" she responded with disgust, "He's awful. I hate Trump." But it was Israeli Culture Minister Miri Regev, not Trump, who compared African refugees to a cancer, a statement that 52% of the Israeli Jews agreed with in one survey. Wow. Also, they've got that big prison down on the southern borders of Israel. They've got thousands of Negroes in there that they're just shoving in there, and they're rotting away. They're not letting them into Israel. Regev later apologized not to Africans, but to cancer survivors for likening them to black people. I revealed to the young woman that Regev was the source of that statement and added that Netanyahu had recently called for surrounding all of Israel with walls to protect ourselves from wild beasts. "I think you have to step back for a second," the young woman snapped. "Israel is next to Syria, which, as you know, is going through a civil war. So when Netanyahu says wild beasts, he means the jihadis, who can potentially be coming into Israel. So I think you need to be very distinctive about that." The cognitive dissonance on display was startling as one anti-Trump liberal after another transformed into a defender of hate speech uttered by Israelis, reflecting the alarming degree to which our Arabs have been dehumanized in the minds of many Israel North American supporters. A woman from Montgomery, Maryland, stood outside the Verizon Center holding a sign that read, "Jews against Trump, because we've seen this before." Though outraged by Trump's anti-Muslim rhetoric and his pledge to build a wall along the U.S.-Mexico border, she seemed to keep her distance from the larger protests against both Trump and Israel. It was soon clear why. ask if she was similarly disturbed by Netanyahu's wild beast comment. Her tone changed and she became defensive. "I didn't hear the context," she said. "Is there a context where the comment would be okay?" I asked. She insisted she couldn't respond without hearing the statement in full and verifying it for herself. Are Jews two-faced? Are they hypocrites? Ironically, her response was not unlike Trump's answer to a CNN interviewer last month when the billionaire was asked to repudiate the support of former Ku Klux Klan leader David Duke. Trump refused to disavow Duke or his white supremacy. Well, as I remember, he said he didn't know who he was, but anyhow. Trump later tried to blame his response on a bad earpiece. A man waiting in line to get inside the stadium told me Trump is psychotic and accused him of pandering to bigots, but he rolled his eyes and walked away when confronted with Regev's cancer analogy. I saw the video of his speech in that big auditorium, and people were on their feet all the time clapping. I didn't see anybody being dragged out. I didn't see anybody demonstrating inside. They loved him. What's going on here? Another man standing in line said he was afraid of Trump and called the wild beast comment abusive and negative. But that's what Netanyahu said. As I tried to explain that Netanyahu was the source of the wild beast comment, the man raised his voice. "What does Donald Trump have to do with Netanyahu?" He went on to blurt out standard pro-Israel talking points. Wow. Buses were exploding in Israel. Buses exploded. There were bombs exploding, he argued. Walls went up to keep Palestinian terrorists out because they're killing people. While Israel insists on its apartheid wall declared illegal by the International Court of Justice in The Hague in 2004, it's vital to keep suicide bombers out. Even Netanyahu has confessed that the true purpose of the separation fence is to protect Israel's Jewish majority from the demographic spillover of Palestinians from the West Bank. Racial spillover? Demographic spillover? Ha, ha, ha. That's what we got. Mexicans spill over, man. The contrary is too often repeated. Israeli government claims the wall was not responsible for reduction in bomb attacks carried out by Palestinians. Israel is a light unto the nations with the most moral army in the world. If you get killed by them, you go right to heaven. The man insisted, ignoring decades of Israeli occupation and its attendant brutal violence against millions of Palestinians who remain without rights. I want my rights, man. The lesson of the day, if there was one, seemed to be that the violent demagoguery, no matter how reprehensible, is perfectly justified when it comes from the mouths of Israeli leaders. Well, how about that? That's an interesting article, I think. That's why the more radical Trump was in that AIPAC meeting, the more people were on their feet clapping over and over and over, yaying. I didn't see anybody demonstrating inside that meeting against Trump. Now, here's a response letter. I don't know whether it's from a Jew or a Nazi or who. But it also appears that Zionism is a failure in terms of peace. In terms of war, it's a huge success, which is why the bankster war racketeering imperialist camp have embraced it. To those of Tel Aviv, Washington, and London who honestly want peace, it's time to end it. The situation in the future is not going to get any better, but worse. It is time for humanity to have an evolution, not only in mind, but in spirit. Jim Crow and Palestine must go. No equality, no peace. And I say, no separation, no peace. Right. Here's another letter from about the same column. The Israelis seem to have developed a Nazi-like attitude towards Palestinians. They are willing to treat Gaza as the ghetto of Warsaw, putting the residents on a near-starvation calorie count. Discrimination towards the Arabs, every bit as racist as the codes developed at Nuremberg, collective punishment, all while screaming that they must protect themselves. As an ethnic Jew, I find this behavior beyond embarrassing. I deny all ties with these momsers, that means bastards, and I spit on the politicians like Hillary who pander to this inhumanity. Sounds to me like there's quite a bit of division among Jews, which is much different than what right-wingers are always saying.
They all love each other, and they're all in lockstep.
Bullshit. That came from the electronicinfada.com. Well, here's some more out of the lovely land of Israel. Since 2012, the number of non-Jewish refugees from African nations in present-day Israel has shrunk from a peak of approximately 64,000 to fewer than 46,000. Israel's successful efforts to reduce the number of African niggers living in territory controls must be recognized for what it is. Ethnic cleansing. Oh, no, not Jews. For the last 4 years, I have compiled an annual list of the public figures most responsible for Israel's racist treatment of Negroes. Wow. They wouldn't do that. They love everybody. The list reads as both an indictment of populist opinion makers and a retrospective of assaults on refugees that have taken place in the last 12 months. Okay, let's see what they've got to say here. In April this year, around 800 refugees, nigger refugees, drowned when the boat carrying them sank in the Mediterranean. In the face of this horrific tragedy, a top Israeli minister chose to revel in the government's successful efforts to keep refugees out of Israel. Yisrael Katz, a leading figure in the right-wing Likud party who heads both ministries for transportation and intelligence and atomic energy, wrote in a Facebook post, "Europe is having a difficult time dealing with invaders and with creating solutions for this difficult issue. While there are differences between us, the migrants traveling to Europe must cross a sea, while those headed for Israel have a direct overland connection. You can see the rectitude of our government's policy to build a fence on the border with Egypt, which blocks the job-seeking Negro migrants before they enter Israel. The elections are over. You can give us some credit now." The same week that Katz posted his morbid message, it emerged that among a group of nigger men who Islamic State militants in Libya had executed for not being Muslims were three Eritreans who Israel had previously deported for not being Jews. Oh, discriminating? Taking a cue from Katz, some Israelis responded to the news over social media with expressions of joy and calls for more of the same. Okay, next thing we got to talk about here. For years, Ben-Dror Yamini has used his regular column in the Israeli best-selling daily newspaper to attack Negroes, as well as Palestinians and progressive Israeli Jews. This August, one of his articles may have shattered all previous records for the depths of which an establishment journalist is willing to descend to support Israel's war on niggers. In it, Yemeni argues that the African men should be transferred out of Israel's cities into desert detention centers in order to prevent romantic relationships between them and Jewish Israeli women, specifically black Jewish Israeli women. Yemeni notes that this motive would be rejected as racist if it were stated out loud. so he advises against raising this point publicly. Hey, these guys seem to be pretty good. Hey, Ku Klux Klan boys and Hollywood Nazis, what do you find wrong with these Israeli Jews boys? They're doing a lot of separation here. They want to build fences and keep those niggas out. So what's your big problem with these Zionist Jews? Suggesting that Jews in South Tel Aviv were paying an unbearable price because of the niggers living among them. He claims that there are arguments for reducing the number of niggers in city centers that cannot be represented because they are outside the rules of political correctness. Seems like things are a little bit like they are here over there. A lot of similarities going on here. Does that make you feel uncomfortable, right wing? Yeah. In August, after Israel's high court ordered the release of nigger refugees who'd been held in the Halat detention center for more than a year, the government grudgingly agreed to let them go, but with a condition. In the final days before the deadline decreed by the court, the government issued documents to 1,200 of those being released, declaring that they were not permitted to live or work in either Tel Aviv or the Red Sea resort of Eilat. The decision to restrict entrance to the two cities, which contained the largest nigger communities in Israel, posed a serious challenge for released internees. Barred from access to their only real support system in Israel, family and friends and refugees scrambled to find lodging for the night in smaller towns where they didn't have any close contacts. Wow. Seems sort of racist to me. Within hours of leaving Halat, 20 were arrested in Tel Aviv for violating the conditions of their release. On the morning that the first 600 were released from Halat, Nissan Ben Hamo, the mayor of Arad, wrote on Facebook that he would not permit any of these niggers to settle in that city. Ben Hamo followed up his tough talk by posting police officers at the entrance to the town with instructions to stop niggers coming into his town. Now, we're not talking about Alabama here. We're talking about Israel, the land of the people of the book. Ben Hamo also called upon residents to maintain alertness and threatening to mobilize the entire town to resist the arrival of niggers, potentially with physical force and violence. He wrote on his Facebook page, "If we have to strengthen our struggle on this issue, I won't hesitate to call on all residents to join and fight for the city's well-being. Keep those niggas out of here." Wow. Soon the local authority of Bezan Betshin, a town in the north of present-day Israel, issued a similar declaration that it would not permit nigger refugees to settle there. Rafi Ben Shitrit, the mayor, urged the town's police commander to take immediate action to prevent illegal infiltrators from staying in Beit Shean, insisting that they were not only unwanted, but they're dangerous niggas, man. In August, Israeli soldiers shot and wounded three citizens of the nigger states attempting to enter Israel from Egypt. When asked about the incident, the army provided several different accounts of the event that contradicted one another. And when Defense Minister Moshe Yaalon was asked about the incident in Israel's parliament, the Knesset, he refused to comment. "I ain't talking about that. I ain't answering that question." Yaalon displayed a similar nonchalance about the shooting of a nigger a few months later. In October, after a gunman opened fire at the central bus station in the southern city of Bir al-Sabah, killing an Israeli soldier and wounding 11 others, an Israeli security guard shot an innocent passerby, Etrian refugee Haftum Zarhum, just out of meanness, I guess. Other Israelis at the scene proceeded to kick Zarhum in the face, slam a large bench into him as he writhed on the floor, cursing him all the while. The crowd then blocked medics who tried to evacuate him to a local hospital. Do you ever read any of this stuff in the American press? Do you ever read this stuff? Do you ever see any of this stuff on ABC, CBS, or even these conservative radio shows? You don't even hear about it on the liberal ones. The killing of Zarhum would seem to be an open and shut case of murderous hate crime. His attackers were caught on camera assaulting him and kicking him in the face. They were even interviewed by Israeli Channel 2 and gleefully took credit for the stomping Zarhum to death. They killed the bastard. Wow. Let's see here. I think there's some more here. A week later, one of Zarhum's attackers returned to Channel 2 and said he had no regrets over his role in kicking this guy to death. This nigger was in our town. And yet, Zolan's defense ministry decided that Zarhum would not be recognized as a victim of terrorism and not even a hate crime. I don't think they even have hate crimes in Israel, because half the Jews in Israel would be in jail. Because he entered Israel illegally without his status, his surviving family members are not entitled to any Israeli government compensation. Wow. More than 2 months have passed since Zarhum was killed, murdered. No charges have been filed against the men who were responsible for his death. Well, another one of the ways Israeli society becomes increasingly racist is when centrist parties like Labor adopt right-wing rhetoric in order to chase after right-wing votes. Maybe that's why I wasn't given any trouble in my trip to Israel. I had no trouble at all. I was treated wonderfully. I had complete politeness everywhere I went. They must have known who I was. In recent years, Labor has not played the foil to Prime Minister Ben Nitwit, but instead acceded to almost all of his hawkish proposals. Instead of standing firm against Israel's lurch to the right fascism, Labor has attempted to ply votes away from Likud with right-wing proposals. That tendency has increased ever since Isaac Herzog was elected to lead the party in November 2013. It has been especially evident in Herzog's solid support of Nitwit's major military campaigns in Gaza and the West Bank, but also in his support for expelled niggers from Israel. Oh, wow. It was not always so. When the Knesset first voted to amend the country's anti-infiltration law in January 2012, to sanction the roundup, detention, and expulsion of nigger refugees, Herzog opposed the measure. When the Knesset voted to amend the law the second time in December 2013, Herzog didn't show up for the vote. And by the time the Knesset voted to toughen it a third time in December 2014, he voted in favor of the amendment along with several other labor lawmakers. Gee, I thought they were liberals. I thought Labor was liberal and loved everybody. In May 2012, Herzog wrote an opinion piece challenging arguments by human rights groups that Eritreans, that's niggers, in Israel deserve protection as refugees. In March 2015, Herzog repeated this refrain in an attempt to peel anti-nigger votes away from Netanyahu on the eve of the Israeli national election, saying, quote, "We need to negotiate with Eritrea on the return of these niggers back to Eritrea." This year, the Labor led a successful effort to abolish the Knesset's Committee on Foreign Workers, one of the few forums in which the concerns of refugees or invaders could receive a hearing in Parliament. Wait a minute here. I lost my place again. In September 2015, Labor publicly complained that Netanyahu's government has not done nearly enough to expel niggers from the country. In a public statement, Herzog's Labor Party wholeheartedly adopted the right-wing, the far right's propaganda points, insisting without any basis that most refugees in Israel have no valid claim to refugee status. We want to get rid of the nigger boys. The crisis of the refugees from Syria is not similar to the issue of the infiltrators from Black Africa, who are mostly migrant workers, the statement read. If only Bibi's government had created immigration laws, it would be possible to send back to their country those who are in Israel for their welfare and for work. But Likud government is only good at talking, and it's responsible for the troubles of the residents of the South Tel Aviv. That's the black end of town, I guess. I didn't get down there. My tour guide didn't take me down and show me that stuff. During her first visit as a Knesset member from 2013 to 2015, Eilat Shaked headed the parliamentary lobby to return the infiltrator niggers to their countries, a group dedicated to expelling all nigger refugees from Israel. Do you read anything about that in the New York Times? I didn't read anything about that in the Chicago papers. I didn't see anything on television. In her second term, Shaked was appointed Justice Minister, a position she's not shied away from using to advance the lobby's objectives of getting rid of the niggers and getting them out of Israel. Each time Israel's High Court has struck down amendments to the anti-infiltration law as a violation of the country's basic laws, right-wing lawmakers have raged against the judicial decisions and plotted to neuter the country's ability to void legislation. To this end, Shaked introduced a bill in the Knesset to limit the High Court's power to overturn laws. And as judges entered the 11th hour of the deliberations over the Senate's, or the Knesset's, third, and that's a Freudian slip there, Senate, Third Amendment to the Anti-Infiltration by Niggers Law this year, Shaked began to upload videos to the Internet which purported to show nigger refugees in a negative light. Gee. At least they can do it over there. We can't get away with it here, man. Shaked expressed a desire to pressure the judges into issuing a ruling that would leave Negroes under lock and key. You know, these Jews over there are better racist than our white people over here, man. I mean, these boys don't fuck around, and these are leading people in the government saying far more radical things than Trump is saying. Shaked expressed a desire to pressure the judges into issuing a ruling that would leave niggers under lock and key. Within hours, Shaked removed one of the videos she had uploaded after it was pointed out to her that the footage had been filmed in Turkey, not Israel. I guess the Turks they have a problem with niggers too. How come everybody's getting rough with the niggers but us? Ultimately, under threat of losing some of their powers, the High Court judges agreed to let the government's Third Amendment stand with the caveat that refugee Negroes could only be detained for a year. Disappointed that her victory was only partial, Shaked has begun to examine ways of filing criminal charges against Africans who enter Israel. We'll get them one way or another. We'll stuff them away in that prison. Doesn't that sound a lot like over here? Hey, boy, I see you got a joint. Come with me. You're going to prison. During Gilead Erdan's brief term as Interior Minister, he secured the passage of the Third Amendment to the anti-infiltration, they call it infiltration law. I like that. Enabling the incarceration of Negroes in the desert detention centers. We're gonna keep them out of town. Yeah, put them out there in the desert, man, and no air conditioning. In the new Netanyahu, nitwit government, Erdan heads the information. Well, no wonder Netanyahu don't like Obama. Netanyahu's a flat-out racist Jew. There's nothing, there's no way out of it. He's a goddamn Ku Klux Klan Jew. But before taking on these new roles, Irdin decided that any African who did not have a refugee status application pending must return to Africa or be imprisoned indefinitely if they refused. Now, isn't it interesting how they call them Africans? Well, technically they are Africans, but they're niggers. Oh, man. In July, an Israeli court threw out an appeal by human rights groups to quash this draconian, terrible directive. A report by two groups working with refugees in Israel found that some of the Sudanese national niggers that Israel had sent back to Sudan were being tortured by government forces upon their own. Well, if they're not pushed around and tortured by the Kike Jews in Israel, they get pushed around and brutalized by niggers in Sudan. For the remainder of 2015, Erdogan's attacks on refugees consisted not of legal injunctions, but rather racist incitement. Yeah. In April, a massive earthquake shook Nepal, and it was caused by racism. This tragic event was mainly a cause for consternation in Israel because the country is a popular destination for Israeli tourists and also a popular source for surrogate mothers to bring babies to term for gay Israeli couples. Gee, what are the Christians in this country doing about that? I thought they were against that kind of stuff. I don't read that in the church bulletins. Then serving as Interior Minister, Erdogan responded rapidly to the quake by ordering an airlift of Israeli citizens out of the danger zone and to also bring along a small number of local women who were in the final stages of pregnancy with Israeli fetuses. Appearing on the popular television news show to discuss the development, Erdogan emphasized that the Nepalese women's presence in the country was temporary. "We won't convert them to Judaism and let them stay here," he said. The show's host retorted sarcastically, "Of course, after the birth, they will obviously end up in Halat," referring to Israel's desert detention center for nigger refugees. "Oh, they wouldn't do that, would they?" In response, Erdogan burst out in a hearty laughter. For months later, after Erdogan was already left his post in Interior Ministry, he admitted that the true purpose of the Third Amendment was anti-infiltration law, was to incarcerate niggers in order to put pressure on them to leave Israel. As public security minister in a current government, Erdogan has used news of Islamic State's activities in Africa as a pretext to call for tightening the screws even further on refugees in Israel. Without evidence, he has warned that nigger refugees could be Islamic State recruits, casting them as a real security risk. You know, when Trump says this, everybody boos him. When these guys say it, it's wonderful. Erdogan has prodded Netanyahu's counterterrorism bureau into considering some nigger refugees as terrorists. Wow. Guess what? I think I'm going to print this all out. There's more here, but we're running out of time. Print this all out and hand it to all these Christians and liberals around. Say, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? I'll be back tomorrow. Let's see. That's Freya's Day, right? Yeah, I'll be back tomorrow, and I'll be just as disgustingly offensive as I was today. You can bet on it. You can take it to the bank. 5 words. I have nothing to say. Together, shout it out, there's no one who
And remember, Moish, as long as Israel survived, racism will carry on. Hee hee!